And welcome to our weekly State Capitol Report, where we get up to date on all the public policy news from our State Capitol every Monday at this time. There's lots of news to cover today. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, January the 10th. It's good to be back with you. Thanks to John Munson for filling in for me last week. Governor Scott Walker was inaugurated a week ago today, and a new Republican-controlled legislature was also sworn in. Governor Walker promised smaller, better government.
In Wisconsin, we will define our quality of life as the expansion of liberty, freedom, and economic opportunity in neighborhoods all across this state. Our government will not only be smaller, it will be better, more responsive, more efficient, more effective.
We will talk about the first week of business under Governor Scott Walker during this first half of our State Capitol Report with our State Capitol reporter, Sean Johnson. Then after 7:30, we will welcome in Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen to talk about why Wisconsin will join 20 other states in a lawsuit challenging the federal health care reform law. And we will welcome your questions and reactions for both of our guests at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. First, Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter, joins us in the studio. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
So I missed it last week. I was on vacation. You had a busy week.
Yeah, he is really sort of diving right into this. I mean, January can be a month where not much happens, but it looks like the governor's special session hearings on his special session bills are going to get started this week. And last week, he introduced quite a few of them, and you finally have legislation in front of you and some details to talk about.
Right. And indeed, right, one of his first acts was calling a special session of the legislature.
Our message is simple. Act swiftly, act decisively, and pass our jobs plan by the end of February. Let us get Wisconsin working again.
What's that job plan?
The job plan is, you know, just a number of the bills that you've heard him talk about on the campaign and since he was elected. And, you know, and a lot of them are bills that have been around. They're Republican bills that have been around the state capitol for quite a while that they're sort of now clearing the table in a way now that they have Republican majorities in the Assembly, in the Senate, and a Republican governor. Probably the biggest thing that Scott Walker introduced last week was a tort reform bill. And, you know, that's something that, you know, pretty dramatically rewrites the rules of lawsuits in Wisconsin for when you can sue businesses, when you can sue nursing homes, for example, who you sue and how long you have, how much of a time frame you have to sue if you're harmed by a defective product. So, again, these are bills that it's sort of like a laundry list of bills that did not pass or were vetoed during the Doyle years. And then some. There's a few more that were added into this one big tort reform bill. So that's, mm-hmm. that's one of the biggies from last week.
Yeah. So how does tort reform create jobs?
I mean, if you talk to WMC, the state's largest business group, they say that if businesses have a predictable legal climate, that they'll be more comfortable coming to Wisconsin or expanding in Wisconsin. The trial lawyers of Wisconsin, though, say that basically what it's going to do is, shortchange the people of Wisconsin who end up getting hurt through no fault of their own by defective products or businesses. And Mike End is the trial lawyers president, Wisconsin Association of Justice president right now. He questioned how it would create jobs.
Putting a cap on what people in nursing homes who are injured at the nursing home can recover, that's not going to bring jobs into Wisconsin. Making it more difficult for people to recover compensation when they're injured by a product, that's not going to bring jobs into Wisconsin.
And in speaking with a business group, a legal group that represents businesses in Wisconsin, they kind of shot back that, what do the trial lawyers know about creating jobs? And bottom line is this may not be the number one factor a business looks at when they consider whether to relocate to a state, but it is a factor. One thing to add, though, I mean, it's not, even by the National Chamber of Commerce's own rankings, Wisconsin is not, you know, one of the worst states for its tort or its legal climate, for businesses. I think it ranks around and you can question the scientific nature of their survey, but even by the chamber's own survey, Wisconsin's around 24th best in the country. It was 10th best in the country the year before that. It's oscillated between those numbers. So it's not that it's a terrible issue here, but it's one that Republicans have long wanted to deal with.
We just heard in state news an Associated Press story about some of these bills that Governor Walker wants to pass, including tax cuts that would add $80 million a year to the budget deficit. What can you tell us about this, Sean?
Yeah, the biggest bill that would add to the budget deficit is this small business tax credit that the governor talked about on the campaign. And what the bill that he's introduced is a little different than what he talked about on the campaign, where on the campaign he wanted to peg it just to businesses with 50 or fewer employers. What he's ended up doing is offering the credit, a 15% credit to businesses that make $250,000 or less. And that credit would actually be offered to businesses that make up to a $500,000 or less, although it would be gradually phased out as you approach a $500,000. But it's not tied to stuff like, you know, the number of people you employ, things like that. It's just a strict how much did you bring in. That would add about $80 billion right there to the two-year budget deficit. So if you figure Scott Walker's dealing right out of the gate with about a $3 billion budget deficit, that worsens it by $80 billion over the biennium, over the two-year budget right there. He's got a bill that would increase the amount of credits available under the state's economic development tax program that's right now administered by Department of Commerce, would increase that by $25 million. And then his health savings accounts tax deduction bill, that... you know, I think they said that when they introduced that bill, it would be about an $8 million a year effect on the budget. But a more recent bill that was introduced on that showed a potentially larger effect, could be, you know, $20 million a year potentially. So all that stuff adds up, and it makes a budget deficit that's already a pretty tough challenge even tougher.
All right. So with small business tax credits, tort reform, what else is going to be in this jobs plan that the governor wants passed by February?
There's something, there's a bill in there that he put in there that would require a supermajority or a two-thirds vote by both houses of the legislature to increase the income tax or the sales tax. And the legislation that the governor released, at least as it's written right now, is pretty simple. And it really does just say supermajority for income tax increase or a sales tax increase. And the idea is... you know, the governor says that this would make it harder to raise taxes, and, you know, he thinks that's a good thing. There are plenty of ways around the bill, though. I mean, it doesn't cover any number of other fee increases, which, you know, Republicans have traditionally been more comfortable raising. It doesn't cover other types of taxes. You know, if you look back in this last budget go around, it wouldn't have I don't believe it would have touched. You could argue over this, but like the combined reporting tax that was put in that budget, or, you know, when you talk about decreasing the state's capital gains exclusion, that wouldn't be touched. It also potentially puts pressure on local property tax owners. If you figure the state's not going to raise these two big taxes, and the cost of the services that the state and counties deliver keeps going up, the money's got to come from somewhere. Those property taxes, there's no cap on those, and so the local governments could go there. So there's all sorts of potential issues with something like that. That seems like a rather simple, you know, innocuous bill.
Well, besides job creation and this jobs plan, the governor seemed to focus on smaller, better government in his inaugural address. Do we know what he means by smaller government yet?
He talked about a smaller, more effective government. In essence, a smaller government that does more. That's a tall order. I don't know. We'll learn more about what that means to Governor Walker when he introduces his budget in a couple months, I think. You know, we already know that he wants to change the Department of Commerce into a public-private agency. That's another one of his big special session bills. And in doing so, a few hundred people that work there right now who are public employees, it appears, would have to reapply for their jobs, which would then be private jobs, under this Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. You know, is that by Scott Walker's definition a smaller government, even though you now have, who knows, a similar number of positions that are now under a private umbrella? You know, I think there'd be all sorts of questions like that you'll learn more about in the coming months. But, you know, a smaller government that does more is no easy task. There's a lot of vacant positions in state government right now. So how you do that will be interesting.
Our guest is Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, talking with us about the first week of business under the new Scott Walker administration. Governor Scott Walker was sworn into office last Monday, and he laid out his job creation plans for a special session of the legislature. We're talking about that and other issues of the week. We'll also talk about the new legislature, which was also sworn in last week, and welcome your questions and reactions at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Checking the weather forecast for today, it's going to be mostly sunny in western Wisconsin, turning cloudy in the east with some scattered light snow possible. Highs today will be in the 20s. There is a chance of light snow mainly in western and southern Wisconsin tonight and tomorrow. Lows tonight in the teens and low 20s, highs tomorrow in the 20s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, January the 10th. Coming up after 7:30, we will welcome in J.B. Van Hollen, Wisconsin's Attorney General, to talk with us about why Wisconsin will join 20 other states in a fight against the federal mandate to buy health insurance. That's coming up in our second half of our State Capitol Report. Right now, we are talking with Sean Johnson, who is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about what happened last week in state government and what is likely to happen this week. We are welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Sean, Governor Walker gave Attorney General Van Hollen the authority to join this multi-state lawsuit. This is something that Governor Doyle did not give permission to do?
Right, and neither did a Democratic-controlled legislature at the time. So Governor Walker gave the go-ahead, and now it's up to the Attorney General to move forward on that.
We'll get more on that in our next half hour. The new Republican-controlled legislature also sworn in last week. What's happening?
Yeah, well, we now have two pretty sizable Republican majorities in the state legislature, and you know, we hopefully won't beat this, you know, this point too hard for the next couple of years. But right now, the leaders of those chambers are brothers. Jeff Fitzgerald in the state assembly is the speaker, and Scott Fitzgerald in the Senate is the majority leader. And so they both were sworn in officially as leaders last week. Said a few words. Speaker Jeff Fitzgerald basically said that Republicans were swept into power by people who didn't necessarily identify with one political party or the other.
On November 2nd, the silent majority spoke. They don't represent any special interest group, but what they do represent is the growing frustration about where we are heading as a country and a state.
If you're expecting more of the same, you're going to be disappointed. Under Scott Walker and the Speaker and I, the phrase, "that's the way we've always done things," is no longer a valid reason. There are going to be some disappointed lobbyists, there are going to be some disappointed bureaucrats, and there are also going to be some very real changes to the status quo.
What kind of changes to the status quo, Sean?
Well, I mean, we can only judge the session so far and what's been introduced thus far, and I mean, if there's disappointed lobbyists at this point, they're probably Democratic lobbyists or lobbyists representing Democratic interest groups, because the bills that have been introduced so far would be, you know, they're definitely to the delight of Republican lobbyists or business representatives. Other changes to the status quo, there was a pretty interesting move that took place last week involving redistricting. And just to step back a little bit, I mean, redistricting occurs every 10 years after there are new census results, and the basic purpose of redistricting is to make sure that every district has about the same number of residents, and you know, so that every person's vote counts as much as the next. That, you know, that's the technical purpose of it. In fact, it's used by the parties to solidify or even expand their power by drawing the district lines as they please, and set themselves up for more favorable election outcomes. And so it's a big deal. I mean, that's why this last election, one of the many reasons, but maybe the biggest reason why this last election was so huge. And last week, Republican legislative leaders gave themselves access to taxpayer funds to hire private attorneys to handle redistricting, and denied that access to Democrats. And Democrats, including Peter Barca, who's the Assembly Democratic Minority Leader, were pretty livid about it.
The day before, we talked about the spirit of bipartisanship. Everybody ran on the notion of fiscal restraint, and their first actions were counter to both of those proposals. It's deeply disturbing to me.
It's not unprecedented to have public funds go toward private attorneys in redistricting battles. I mean, that has happened in the last couple battles. It is unprecedented, perhaps, to have one party say, "Forget about you guys," in the way that Republicans did here. They're just not going to mess around with it. It definitely tips the scales to them in this redistricting fight. In the Assembly, Democrats there are saying, "Well, we should have this done by a nonpartisan, attorneys that work for the legislature already." Although they had the opportunity to pass legislation that would have required that in this last session. The Senate's kind of an interesting case because last session, the Senate Democrats who were in power authorized both this. Senate Democrats and Senate Republicans to retain attorneys to deal with redistricting. And so now Senate Democrats have, their attorneys have been fired. So it's an interesting case over there. I read over the weekend that Majority Leader Fitzgerald said, he did not think that Democrats were going to pay his legal bills, that they were going to reject the bills. But we don't know that for sure. The majority leader who was in charge at the time is gone.
Doesn't sound like there's going to be a lot of kumbaya going on.
No, I mean, mm-hmm. that's sort of right out of the gate. That's a pretty big move.
Let's take some calls. Jerry in Madison is with us. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. In regards to supermajority vote for raising taxes, I would suggest that it should require a supermajority vote to even pass a law that requires a supermajority vote. And I think this can be done in the rules committees.
Does that sound right, Sean?
Interesting idea. I don't know if it could be done in the rules committees where they change the rules to. I suppose they could because they have that for some types of contracts and pension votes where they have to have a larger vote.
And again, this is requiring 2/3 majority in the houses to pass a tax increase is what's being proposed.
Right. Yeah. The other thing about that, I mean, they're talking about passing a law. So if a future legislature decided, well, we really need to increase taxes right now, they could, by a simple majority, they could overturn that law and increase taxes. Kind of the same way that the 2/3 funding law in Wisconsin worked. And that was just a law. It said the state will pick up 2/3 the cost of education, sort of a convoluted formula. When push came to shove and the state didn't have money for it, they overturned the law. So it's one of the other facets of that bill that, it's not as clean cut as it looks.
Let's take another call. Megan in Johnson Creek. Hi, Megan.
Hi. I had a question about, I read somewhere that Scott Walker's looking to overturn some of the laws that were just enacted on predatory lending. And how does that help with jobs, or what is the benefit of loosening the restrictions on predatory lending? And what is the timing for doing that?
Do you know specifically whether Scott Walker would like to overturn the regulations on payday lenders?
I have not heard him personally speak to that. And I feel like I may have read something along those lines too, but I can't speak to exactly what he said there. I do know that there are lawmakers who want to revisit that And specifically, there was something in the payday lending bill that passed last session that, well, after it got done with the governor's veto pen, outlawed auto title lending, basically. So I think that's one area where they might look. You know, as to how that deals with jobs, I mean, I can tell you the pitch will be that that bill was an anti-jobs bill and that there are people that work at these auto title lending stores. But that's one I think Democrats will certainly call attention to if it were to come up, because, you know, the payday lending industry is not one that's particularly popular.
Yeah, we just have a minute. That's not the only new law or law enacted by a Democratic-controlled legislature that might be looked at with a Republican-controlled legislature, right? I mean, isn't there talk about changing a lot of other things, too?
I think you could look at a lot of the stuff that was passed in the last session and, you know, with the idea that single-party fleeting is sort of single-party control is fleeting in Wisconsin. There was some stuff passed last session that might get overturned. I'm going to have to make a list of this when it comes up. You know, like the Indian mascot law, for example, that could be one that goes down. There was some changes to teachers' collective bargaining rights with the QEO last session. Who knows what a Republican majority and Republican governor will do with that? I think the list could go on and on.
We'll continue talking about all of those possible proposals in future state capitol reports. Sean, thanks very much for being with us.
All right, thanks, Joy.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio, state government reporter. Stay with us. Our state capitol report continues. After the news, we will welcome in Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen. This is the Ideas Network.